here.
Yo, yo, everybody, what's up? We back in it. It's the Struggle Bear Podcast. I'm your host, Rashad Bashir. I know it's been a very, very long time. I've been out of it for 2 months. My beard is actually looking good now. It's starting to connect. I'm starting to look like a brand new dude out here, you know? I think my beard is growing because the closer that Trump gets out of office, the more my beard is starting to connect. I think that's what's happening right now. Oh, it's been so much. It's been my 10-year comedy anniversary, and it's been my boy Justin 10-year comedy anniversary. We got Justin on the line right now. We got him on the podcast. We haven't
another collaboration show.
Just a kid
and just a kid from Brooklyn.
Just a kid from Brooklyn with a struggle beard. That's what it is.
Speak for yourself. I've been using tea tree oil and it's been working wonders.
Oh my goodness. All y'all kids on my ass with that tea tree oil and sea moss.
I don't drink no sea moss now.
No, okay. I don't do that. You know, I think the best beard growth oil is lady juice.
The natural juices.
I think that's what it is. Yeah, it's been a fun couple of days for me and the lady. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if you experience this, but your wife is working from home.
Mm-hmm.
You trying to get a job. I'm trying to get a job. I'm only working on the weekends right now. So sometimes she be in the house. We be like, yo, babe, come on, let's do something. What she say? I don't have time. I don't have time. No, I don't have time. What you mean don't have time? I don't have time. I don't have to, girl, we right here. Get it down. Just type, okay? And just like put a virtual background up. All right. I know I'm gonna pop in and out a couple of times, but put a virtual background up. Like, I don't have time. I don't have to. Don't you hate that?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. You just be like, and she always say, you are not gonna be no 2 minutes. You like, oh, well. How disrespectful can you be? But honestly, for me, it's a compliment on my end because she's like, you know, you ain't going to be 2 minutes. It's going to get crazy. You won't be in here. You're going to give me like a strong 17. A strong 17. Like my phone is running out of battery and I'm trying to get home and I got to charge it up from 2% to 17. Because you know, you need a strong 17 to make it home. As soon as you get that strong 17, you put power saver on, you got that little bit of yellow in the bars right there. You got that little bit of yellow. You're like, yeah, I can make it home in half an hour with this. Just don't go on no apps.
No social media. Nothing.
So what you did for your 10-year anniversary?
I was home. I ain't do shit. It's still the COVID / pandemic era. So I didn't, you know what the original plan was. The original plan was for both of us to record our albums back to back.
Yeah.
We was doing, what were we doing? We were, the plan was for us to do half hours, I think.
Yes.
And our person left us, moved to Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
Supposed to help us produce it. But we still love you, Vanetta. We still love you.
Ah, damn. You just put a name to the person.
We love you. Put... You know, we know you, what's the slogan? Pissing on the whatever it is. Patriot. I don't know.
You sound like George Bush from that J. Cole. There's a saying that, I don't know if it's in Tennessee, it's probably
fool
in Texas.
Me once. Don't.
Shame on you. You fool me, but you can't get fooled again. Like,
yeah. You go, fool me twice, but you can't get fooled again.
fooled. You can't get fooled again.
Yeah. But that was our original plan. You still did your show. And that was another plan of mine. I wanted to do a show, but you know, at the time, some of the venues weren't even doing like anything indoor or outdoor yet. So
it's tough. Kind
of fell through.
It was tough. When that lady hit me up for that show, I was like, yes, I definitely gotta do this. By the way, I gotta reach out to her to see how she is, because it's not like she did help me with the, you know, my 10-year anniversary, mm-hmm. because I couldn't do it at the spot I wanted to do it at. So I definitely have to reach out to her and say thank you, see how she's doing, how's business going, so forth and so on. But man, a lot of the comics that were from out of the state that moved here from like Florida or North Carolina, South Carolina.
Midwest. They all ran Midwest, back like a bunch of bitches.
Went back, and now all their numbers jumped up because they thought shit was cool because we not as congested as New York is. So we could go back home, everything gonna be cool. And y'all numbers rising higher than ours.
Yeah.
Only reason why our numbers is rising up because the hi-hat ninjas in Brooklyn, because I don't want to say it over this podcast and have somebody listen, I get Nick Cannon. But
it's at the hi-hat ninjas.
The hi-hat ninjas, because they move so fast, they dress all in black, and they have different clans, you know?
You know, I just can't get with the mask. I don't want to make... I can't eat my Lox bagels with the mask. My schmear cream cheese. Anyway.
So basically, Justin just did a Nigerian Italian.
That's what we'll call it.
The hi-hat ninjas, they out here just together acting like social distance is a non-thing for them. Gathering in just large groups. I'm like, shit, we should have just been partying with them. I would have put on a little...
I'm good.
I would have put on a little titty carpet on my head and just been like, nope. Yo, what's up? Nope. But you know what? You're right. You're right. Because right now, this city is about to go into another lockdown.
Yes, it is.
The 1st of December.
Yeah, possibly. Or sooner. We'll see. We'll see what happens in the next couple of days or so.
Yeah, I just don't know how this is happening. Like, I know it's happening because they were like, let's let all the kids back in school. Dummy, why would you do that?
Yeah.
These little kids don't like wearing a mask in the first place. I work retail.
I don't want to wear it.
I work retail for a store, which a lot of people bring their kids to. And they walking in just... And they're just, oh my God, what is it? Like, oh my God. And we have to tell them, please, hey guys, let's have fun and wear your mask. Parents was like, oh, he doesn't want to wear his mask. She doesn't want, it's uncomfortable for them. No questions asked. If you see black parents in there, put your goddamn mask on. I ain't for this shit right now. Play with me if you want to.
You want to make it to Christmas, don't you? Huh? Anyway.
Why would you let kids that have no discipline on how to wear a mask back into school? I can understand high schoolers. At least they would have some type of common sense about their health being in jeopardy if they don't wear their mask.
Right.
They would get it. But you got... 4 and 5 year olds talking about, I'm hot. I don't want. I can't drink my mom's apple juice.
But yep. So 10 years in the game.
10 years in the game, man.
Yes, sir.
How you feeling right now?
I feel the same as when I started. I remember though how I started. I started writing 4 years before I started in 2010. So like I went to a show in 06. I went to some show at Caroline's. I was supposed to see Paul Mooney, but something happened with his plane, so he couldn't make it from LA in time. So they sent Greer Barnes instead to headline.
Wow.
That was crazy. If I'm not mistaken, Will Savince was the opener. I can't remember who the host was, but I remember Will Savince was the opener for sure. And Greer Barnes closed. I forgot who there was another comic in between Vince and Greer Barnes. But like after that day, I just started getting these little, you know, them little notebooks you find at the 99-cent store.
Yeah.
I got a tape recorder and I was just writing down stuff what I thought was funny. Really, it was just like me talking shit. And then in 2010, I don't know how I came across it. I might have just looked online for like comedy stuff, and I guess I stumbled across Caroline's website, because you know all the comedy clubs, oh, you could do comedy too, and blah, blah, blah. And you see the fucking ad and click on it. You're like, all right, $350. Yeah, I'm going to be amazing after 6 weeks of stand-up learning. Take the class. Like I started with a class of 40, and 10 years later, only 4 of us are still actively doing comedy. Most of them quit.
Wow. Ken Jonas was in your class, right?
No. No.
Wait. Oh.
I had of people that are still doing it right now, it's me, Mike Jenkins. He also goes by Mad Dog Jenkins. Sandeep. I forgot Sandeep's last name right now. And Ray Cleary. We're the 4 that are still actively doing stand up. And then, you know, even like with people you meet over the years too, like who else? Who did I meet my first year in? Carl Samuels is like in and out. I mean, he still does it, but he's not doing it like he was 10 years ago.
Okay. That's the thing
you'll see too. Like you'll see like folks, guys and girls come and go. But yeah, I used to do the new talent night on Mondays with Linda Smith, who was also my comedy teacher.
I used to
go to the open mics with Sassy on Fridays.
Sassy.
Yeah. What's Sassy's last name again? I forgot.
Tegan?
Yeah, Sassy. She was a clown by day and a comedian by night. Seriously.
Wow.
Yeah, she was a professional clown. She had like
her
own clown company and everything. But yeah, I used to do that. That's how I met like Nikki Sunshine and a bunch of other people. I used to go to the Monday, that freaking long ass open mic at the Laugh Lounge with Pudge and Dennis and Chris DiStefano, Brian Jen.
That's how
I started meeting a lot of people, because like Paola used to go there. A lot of people that we know still, like they all used to go there. And that's how.
And they're still surprised to see us still doing comedy.
Yeah. I used to do, and after I met Pudge, you know how it goes when you first starting out. You see the new comic, you're like, oh yeah, I got this show, and you got to bring 5 people. And you know, so I thought that was like, oh my God, I'm on at the Laugh Lounge, blah, blah, blah. I have my 5 people. Right. And then from there, I think Pudge had a Saturday show that he used to do at the old Laugh Factory, which turned to Times Square Arts Center. And it was him, Dennis, Justin Williams, Brian Jen, Chris DiStefano, and what's this dude's name? Akash. You remember Akash?
Akash?
Akash
Sin.
Yes. Yeah. So we used to be there on Saturdays doing comedy. And it was dope because Pudge used to give you tickets to sell. And I remember the first show. Yes? I'm being heckled on the podcast. How can I help you?
If y'all don't know, this podcast. Is Justin's wife.
Don't say her name. She's
I wasn't going to.
She's the not the she's the Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz. Wow.
No one knows what she looks like unless you're close to me. But Times Square Arts Center. I used to sell tickets for Pudge.
Oh wow.
And I remember when I started too. Like I met Nico. Nico was like, I think he had just turned 15.
What? Oh my.
And I was
goodness.
Like real, yo, like my first couple months in comedy, I thought I was the shit. I was like, yo, I'm gonna be the best black Puerto Rican comic in the world. And the motherfucker was like, yo, you ever met Imagine? And then I watched Imagine's video. I was like, I ain't shit.
Yo, that's what we all think when we go in. When we first start, we get all this support. Everybody's like, yo, you the funniest. You funny at the job. You funny at the family gatherings. Right. You funny at Thanksgiving and stuff.
Right.
But when you get in front of people that really do this, you like, oh.
Bless you. You guys couldn't hear that, but someone sneezed. Bless you again. I even like, you know, I was cocky back then. I'm still cocky, but at least I'm funnier now. I was not funny 10 years ago. I don't know what motherfuckers was laughing at. But I remember, you know, Pudge when we first, you know, got to talking about stand up, like Pudge has like a couple years ahead of me. Like I think he's like 15 years in. So at the time he was like, yeah, you know, you're 1 year old. So, like, that's how he was like, you know, you need to watch these guys that are, like, 10 years, you know, 15, 20 years in and see how they doing it. And then he put me on a reading list. He gave me a list of books to read.
Oh, dope.
So, like, that's when I got the Judy Carter Comedy Bible book. I got Born Standing Up by Steve Martin. I read that shit from cover to cover. It was a quick read, but it was really interesting. And it was another book that he told me to get. It took me a couple years to find it because it was always sold out. I think it was Comedy Writing Secrets and stuff like that. And then, yeah.
Let me ask you something. Like, getting all these books, do you feel that it was constructing you to be a certain type of comedian instead of just being yourself? But I know, like, later on, you had to discover that, but looking back on it, do you feel like those books were making you, do you feel like they were instructing you on how to be yourself on stage?
No, I think those books, I mean, you know, because they're written by white comics, majority of those books, they kind of try and force you to be that way and write that way. You know, like if you have the Comedy Bible, So, you know, like, you remember how they, like, in the book, they would talk about the actions in your bit to get the actions across. I always found that certain comics to this day might have misread that. And that's why we have the whole Creek in the Cave style. Is it weird, man? Like, no, I think you don't have to say the word. Just do the action, like, the tone, like, you know what I mean? So some of those books, yeah, I think they try and force you to write the way the author of the book wrote, you know, how they prepared their stand up and stuff like that.
Right.
I always learned on stage, honestly. I learned, and the funny thing is all of those, cause my first couple years, my first 2.5 years, I was doing just comedy clubs. Like I didn't know anything about the Black Circuit till like 2013 when I met, I guess you guys, when I met you guys at Identity Bar or Bar 82, wherever the hell we met. I know me and you met at Identity Bar. That I remember. But before that, I was just doing bringers. Like I would do Laugh Lounge, Caroline, New York, when Al owned it. I was interning at Broadway back in 2013. So, you know, I've done a lot of shit. You know, I've done the open mic scene, didn't really like it, but I still would do it from time to time, go running from place to place. Because there was a year where all comics weren't working I think it was 2013. And it was like a good 30 or 40 of us that weren't working, maybe even more. It might have been a good 100 because they all went to Identity Bar. Anyway, we all weren't working. So, like, that's all we did was just stand up. We would start at, what, freaking 3:30. And I'd get home at 3 in the morning sometimes because I would hit open mic after open mic, then start going around the city to shows that I, you know, because I guess Callie and Tino introduced me to the black circuit. Like, Callie, I met Smokey Suarez through Callie. I met Marlon Randolph through Tino. And then, like, once I met Marlon, that was it. Like, I was going everywhere. I was going traveling to Jersey, doing shows all around, like, the boroughs. I was in the Bronx. I was in Queens. I was, like, everywhere.
When he had this show at the original Inkwell, that was my second interaction with a black audience.
Okay.
My first one was at Mocha Lounge.
Okay.
And I took it to the face. It was not a pretty sight, but that was expected.
Yeah, back then.
That was
Mocha was like, oof.
It was the Lion's Den.
Yeah. Mocha was a beast. Brooklyn Exposure, like your first couple times there, you probably would have bombed. Cause like, I remember
times
there, it was like, oof. And I was the co-host there. So I used to host the first half with almost all of Marlon's shows, actually. Brooklyn Exposure, Jordan Lounge in Jersey City.
Right.
He did Boca Grande. So yeah, like, you know, like I think 2013 to 14, like I was everywhere, man. I was going to Connecticut with Franz and Mills and Quan. Then JP was taking me and Elijah to Slade's in Boston. First time I went to Philly was with JP. Actually, most of the times I went to Philly was with JP. We did Warm Daddies at Touré's. And then from there, you know, I got my connections through different vets. So that's how I was
able to
go from Boston to Virginia, you know, anytime, you know, I could, and, you know, get booked because you won't make them dollars. But I think, you know, me personally, I love all forms of stand up, but I prefer black audiences, Spanish audiences too, even though I consider myself to be more of a black comedian, because them, you know, when I be doing them Spanish audience, I do my little jokes about my family, and then once I flip to my mama's side, they be like, yeah, but you know,
I mean, with black rooms and Latino rooms, they force you to go beyond what you wrote. Mm-hmm. They want you to be authentic. They want you to be the culture.
Yeah, you got to be real.
You got to be real. You have to be the culture when it comes to black and Latino audiences.
Yeah.
Go to a white audience, you could just go off and rip and do your jokes.
Yeah.
Because if you try to bring the black or Latino culture energy to a white audience, they'll look at you like, wait a minute, what's going on? Why is he talking to us? Mm-hmm. Like, it's weird. A conversation. Yeah. It get really weird. Very weird. And it just makes me uncomfortable. And, you know, I'm just like, I don't want to do this room because it's not fun.
Yeah.
If y'all want to allow me to express myself as the artist that I am and do it the way I do it, and y'all want to be held back, then I don't want to do it. But there's a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah. Yeah.
As far as writing gigs, TV gigs.
A lot of opportunity.
Management. Black and Latino rooms are good for making money.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But
very good for making money.
But yeah, also too, I mean, you can get discovered in those rooms too.
That too.
Because, you know, the Tina Grahams of the world and Bob Sumner, and, you know, there's people scouting. Like, I mean, it's a fact that at Warm Daddy's, you know, Warm Daddy's was known for you know, people getting discovered because like Ice Cube would come there and watch the shows and be looking for talent. I was never there when he was there. But you know what I'm saying? Even like Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart was still going through there after he blew up. And he would, of course, he was performing, but you know, he was looking for talent too. Because when they was doing Heart of the City, I'm pretty sure he got all them Philly dudes from Warm Daddies or the Laugh House. You know, so you never know. You know, people they get discovered either way. Like, I mean, shit, Michael Che got discovered doing his hipster. He had this hipster show out in Williamsburg. I forgot the name of the place right now, but that's how he got discovered. And he was on at the clubs. They wasn't paying attention to him in the clubs like that. And he got discovered at a freaking independent show he was producing. So you never know. Wow. You never know.
Yo, I'm like, shit, why ain't nobody been discovering us? At Better Not Bring Your Kids.
Yeah, we was at Pinnacle. We was at the biggest club in the city.
Yo, and
we did that shit in 5 years.
It felt so good to hit that marker in such a short period of time, because we got that like 7 years in.
We got it in 5. Oh, you mean 7 years in the comedy? Yes. Yeah.
Right.
But like doing the show, we had been doing our show for 5 years, and then we got into that club and we was there for two years. We did 9 shows. That shit crazy.
Yeah, that was a great time, man. And that really showed who supported us and who was hating on us.
Oh yeah. You know how the comedy game is, crabs in a barrel.
Oh my goodness. And now we all fucking crabs in a mask right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everybody,
we all back at square one.
We all back in square one.
Everybody.
And my thing is, it is so hard. I said this from the beginning. I don't care what anybody says. All of y'all that played off and shitted on doing live Zoom shows, y'all fucking suffering right now.
Yeah.
Y'all are suffering
right
now. People coming up to me talk about, yo, I got this material I ain't did since March. I'm like, nah, man. I'm sorry. I am sorry. You've been writing all this time. You ain't even made an attempt to get on fucking Facebook Live. You could have got on Facebook Live.
Yeah.
And just rattled off the jokes just like that.
Yep.
And just rattled off the jokes just like that. But nah, y'all was like, nah, I'm not with that. I don't do that. You didn't even give yourself the chance to adapt to a new form of comedy.
Yeah.
A comedian knows how to adapt to anything and make it funny.
Yeah.
And create humor.
Mm-hmm.
You have to become a specialist in laughter. You have to become a specialist in humor.
Yes, sir.
So that means adapting to everything. Anything thrown your way. If you couldn't do shows outdoors, motherfucker, you better go to the projects and make people laugh on the elevator. Like, yo, I had
comedy show in the courtyard at 3:00. What's up?
Yeah, like, yo, I had everybody from 4E dying. Like,
yeah. It's true.
This is what it is, man. We about to have another lockdown. What y'all gonna do? Y'all gonna be out in the cold? You know, black people don't go out in the cold. We get ashy too fast.
That's funny. Cocoa butter gonna be everybody's best friend. No.
And be like, look, we got shea butter and candles, okay? Just stay by this heat right here and moisturize your knuckles. That's what we need you to do.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, get ready for these Zoom shows. This other lockdown. Like me, I'm glad that we're going to have another lockdown, because I'm getting tired of paying comedians every week. I just be real about it. But you got to pay for the best. You got to pay for the best. I don't want to be the host and got a whole bunch of open mic comedians on the show doing their goofy ass shit. And I got to come through like LeBron and grab every rebound after you done missed a shot, and I gotta dunk from the three-point line in order to get the energy back up. I get tired of doing that. I get tired of doing that. I want to have a show. I get in. I warm the crowd up. And then everybody else get up there and do their thing and just keep it going.
Yeah. What? I was going to say, I can remember off the top of my head, too, because it wasn't that long ago. So in the last 10 years, right, you know, I've done shows with big names, right? I think the coolest moment for me was going on stage right before Mike Epps at Laughaholics in East New York, aka.
Yo, I was so mad when I heard that.
My man.
I was so mad when I heard that. I was like, damn, I wanted to be there because that's one of my inspirations for doing stand up.
Yeah, that was so cool. AJ Johnson, I did a show with AJ Johnson at the diner, also at Laughaholics. Yeah, that was cool. You lucky bastard, you got to do. You got to open for George Wallace.
Yeah, I mean, it was a soft open. Let's just put it that way.
You still did it.
it was a soft open. So that was dope because it was just like I never been to the diner before, and me being there, it was just an experience like none other.
Yeah.
Because at the time, Quan was hosting.
Yeah, Quan was the co-host. Shout out to Quan was the Wiggins. Co-host.
Shout out
Happy
to
Happy birthday, yo, best
acapella.
Yeah. Remember that shit? We got to do a pod with that with his old promoter name, Quan Acapella, aka Wiggins.
Quan Acapella.
And DT used to call him Acapulco. That used to get me on the floor. Quan Acapulco, Acapella, whatever your name. Nah, but.
They were supposed to be our original crew for Better Not Bring Your Kids. Or was it a different name at the time?
No. They were the crew for the original crew for Leaders of Stand Up.
Right.
And what was our show called before we started Better Not Bring Your Kids? We only did one show together with all of them, and it was The World's. What was it? The World's End Comedy Show or some shit like that?
Yeah.
It was something. I would have to look at the flyer to find it. But
And then some producer fuck shit happened.
Yeah, where they mixed up the shows and we did like the longest house show / privately produced show mashup. Like that show started at like 9 o'clock and I swear Derek got on at 1:40 in the morning. It was crazy. That was I mean, we made good money that night, but
Brandon Reeves was on that show.
Yeah, everybody. Suba, Brandon Reeves. I didn't even perform. I just, because it was too many comics. I was like, nah, I'm going to just tell people when it's their time to go on. I'm going to just collect these dollars. But,
I mean, and that was always a good thing with you. Like, you always sacrificed your time for other comedians, and people didn't even see that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I can't recall a time where I was like, I'm not going to perform. I'm going to let everybody perform. But you, definitely.
Because, you know, I mean, yeah, people was there to see us, but, you know, sometimes it's like, let this motherfucker go. But, okay, so the original LOS crew, it was supposed to be me, you, Quan, Mills, David Shine, I said Quan already. DT, and I think that was it. But the only guys that was like with it was me, you, and Mills. Everybody was like, "Nah, I'm not doing that." And I'm like, "Yo, we could dominate the city. Like, everyone could have their own show in their borough. David could have had his show upstate where he's from, and nobody was with it. And then when we started doing our thing at Eastville, and then we moved to Broadway and Greenwich. And then motherfuckers was like, yo, can I get on? Now we getting momentum.
Now everybody wanna.
Yeah, everybody that wasn't with it, now they wanted to be with it. And then we got Caroline's and Harlem Nights and so on. And it was just like, everybody was like, yo. And then, like, fast forward to, what, 2015, we meet Kevin Mason. And then, like, the three of us was just, like, everywhere. College.
Oh, yeah.
doing shows in Bushwick and Harlem and everywhere, Long Island, whatever. We was just all over the place.
We was a trio.
Yeah. Because he had, you know, he has the same hunger that we have, you know. Not saying these guys don't have the hunger, but they wanted to do their thing solo. They didn't want to do it with, you know, a group, which is understandable. I mean, comedy, you're on stage by yourself, but you still need a team around you to propel you to the next level sometimes. Because you can't do everything by yourself. Because one really does everything by themselves. Really, truly.
No, you need a team. All of the out-of-state comedians that move here, they link up with the other comedians from their hometown.
Yep.
Philly dudes with the Philly dudes.
Philly dudes, yep.
The Midwest guys with the Midwest guys, the LA cats are doing cocaine, so they're not really with anybody. The Florida cats, they hang with the Florida cats, and sometimes they rock with the St. Louis crew.
Yeah.
But the St. Louis crew, they with they crew. But it's all about who's funny with who.
Yeah.
Who's comedy you respect. You like, I like his stuff. And, you know, we cool. We go places. And we always rock out on the same shows. And we always killing on the same shows and stuff. So.
Yep.
If people out here seeing you working, they're going to be like, yo, where you at next? Where you at next?
Yeah.
But sometimes what I'm noticing, good comedians don't like hanging out with other good comedians due to the fact that, oh, you're going to be taking my opportunities away from
me.
You're going to be taking stage time away from me. What are you talking about? Stage time is a construct, as people say.
Yeah.
Everywhere is your stage.
Yeah, everywhere.
You can talk to anybody and be funny.
Yeah.
You can talk to anyone and run a set like it's a regular conversation and have them laughing the whole time.
Yep. I mean, yeah, you know, and in New York, it's like, it's real cutthroat. Like, folks won't tell you about auditions at clubs. They won't tell you about TV auditions. And then when we all end up there, you know, people will be like, yo, why you ain't tell me about this shit? Well, you here, motherfucker. So obviously you didn't call me.
Sounds like LA.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think me personally, I think New York and LA are equal as far as how comedians act towards each other.
I can really disagree. At least here, if you funny.
Yeah.
You funny.
Yeah.
In LA, if you funny. Nah, fuck this dude. He's my competition. Fuck her. She gonna get that audition I'm working for. And really with LA, you have to be more than just a comedian.
Yeah.
Like here in New York, you could just be a dope comic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In LA, you gotta be a dope comic. You gotta be a sketch writer. You gotta be a good director. Because if you ain't good on screen, then being a comedian is just like having a regular corona mask. Like, oh, okay. You got a regular mask. Okay. Mask. Yeah, that's what being a comedian is in LA. You gotta bring so much more to the table. If you're a fucking wrestler, that would be something to put on your LA resume.
I was a pro wrestler. I didn't make it, but you know, I do comedy.
you gotta be a fucking ventriloquist in order to make it out in LA. You gotta be more than just a comedian on stage. That's why I was looking at some of those open mic lists because I wanted to do the open mics just to you know, see what the tone was like in LA. And I'm seeing different open mic themes talking about, oh, we do, this is all sketch improv and you gotta come dressed as a character because this is character comedy and we're just working strictly on characters. What the fuck are y'all talking about?
Oh, man. That's funny. Yeah. Yep. And cool thing about I said, I would say the cool thing about being from New York and doing the comedy scene out here is performing at all the legendary clubs. I think I've hit every club in New York City except for like Stand Up New York, Governors, and what's the other one?
Iceta,
Brokerage. Those are like the only clubs I haven't hit. Every other club in New York I've played.
Even the Cellar?
Oh, I forgot about the Cellar. No, not the Cellar. No, that's, come on, man. You gotta be a Jedi apprentice, and then hopefully become a Jedi Knight, and then a master to get in there. Like it, you know. That,
you gotta find Mace Windu's hand that got chopped off, and then bring it back to him, and just
that getting in there is crazy.
Sew it back on, like it's crazy.
You either have to have a dope ass recommendation from one huge megastar comic, or you get your three recommendations and have a really solid TV credit. And of course, it has to be a legit comedy stand-up TV credit. Like, you have to be, you know, Comedy Central, done stand-up on Comedy Central or something like that, or HBO or Showtime. Nowadays, it's Hulu and Netflix, but you know what I mean? Like, you have to have, you know.
Yeah.
I've heard stories about getting in and getting recommendations from a lot of these old heads, and these motherfuckers want you to do yoga and shit in the morning with them and help them move their sofa. Like, this is real shit. Go bike riding with these motherfuckers.
Really? Yeah.
For them to give that nod to the owner. So they're like, yo, this dude's good. This chick is good. Like, put her on. So, you know. You still got to jump hurdles with that.
I got to be a fucking apprentice.
Almost.
For a veteran comedian that's been doing the same jokes for 25 years.
He said it, not me, ladies and gentlemen. Let me stop.
I'm not saying that's all comedians. No, I'm not saying that's all veteran comedians.
But, yeah, you know, to get on at places like that, you know, it's, you know, that's what it is. I mean, how many clubs did I pass at? I passed at Broadway, which makes you pass at Greenwich. And then we got that because we produced for them. Of course, we got past the Carolines because we produced for them.
Yeah.
It's like a semi.
Carolines didn't really. It was like a semi.
I consider all of those to be like semi passes. I think the only one like I really had to audition and get the okay, even though they never fucking put me on the lineup, was when Ha Comedy Club existed. Like, I auditioned for them twice. My first audition, I did, and it was funny, too, because it's like, they make you perform twice to make their decision. So, you do two shows that night. So, like, I remember at the time, I auditioned the first time, and it was crazy, because the first show I did, I killed it. Then, you know, I got to chill for like an hour, and then the next show started later that night, and I did okay. And I remember the booker, who I won't name because we're actually cool. he might get mad because, you know, comics is sensitive. He didn't like a joke I did. I can't remember what it was, some type of joke I was doing back then, 2014-ish, and he didn't like it. So that's why he didn't pass me. I was like, what? So then, like a few months later, I got the opportunity to audition again, and the owner was there, and I did 5 minutes, and it was crazy too, because I got there early. They wanted me there at like 8 o'clock when they first opened, and I waited around all night, and I remember Pat Brown was there, Dino was there, and Mark Theobald, and they was like, you auditioning tonight? I guess I had that I'm auditioning look. I must have been nervous, and I was like, yeah, and it took almost all night for me to get put on stage. And I remember Pat was like, yo, put Justin up. He's been here all night. And I think I did two shows that night. I did the 11:30 and I did the 12:45. And after the first show, the owner, yo, no bullshit, she watched zero of my set. When she came in, I was doing my Mike Tyson impression. So when I saw her come in the room, I thought it was the light. So like, I did like Tyson impression, and I got off, and she was like, you could have stayed up longer. I was watching you. I was like, in my head, like, bitch, you wasn't watching me. I was on stage for a whole 4 minutes before you walked in. And she passed me. And then I didn't hear from them. The next time I knew about Ha, they moved to Yonkers and changed their name. So, you know, see how that goes.
Wow.
So, but it's a process. I mean, I never passed the strip, but I auditioned for them twice.
Okay.
The first time was so interesting because I forgot it wasn't Richie. Richie wasn't doing the auditions at that particular time in like 2013 or 14 it was. It was JR's son. He was doing it and he goes, "I liked you, but what did he say to me?" He said something real racist to me. He's like, "I liked your set, but I have Jewish comedians that talk about being Black and Puerto Rican." And I looked at him like, how the fuck would they know my experiences if we have these cultural differences, these racial differences? So, like, I remember getting mad about that. And, like, wow. I just waited. Like, I skipped the year. I skipped the following year, and I didn't audition. And then I came back and I auditioned again. That was the year me, you, and Kev auditioned. You guys passed.
Yeah.
And I did my shit.
That was what? That was what, 2016?
Yeah. So, like, I had missed a year. Yeah. I skipped 2015 after the original one I did in 2014. Went back 2016. Richie was back in charge of late night and auditions again. So, I was hyped. I was like, all right, the owner's here. Fuck. You know, this is Eddie Murphy's former manager. So, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go up there and do my thing. I do my shit. And, you know, he pulls you to the side at the end of the night, gives you notes and critiques. And he's like, "I liked you, but I want to see you again." And he was like, "Did you audition here before?" And I was like, "Yeah, 2 years ago, but you weren't here." And he's like, and then he's like, asking me how long I was doing it. Where was I performing? And I'm like, "Yo, I produced a show for Al Martin downtown and blah, blah, blah." And I'm, you know, I go on the road and he just was like, "Yeah, I'm not passing." I'm like, "The fuck?"
Oh, yeah, because they had that issue with Al, right?
No, I don't think it was a beef with Al. I just think, I hate to say this, but I think, you know, they make their quota on Black and Latino comics and Asian comics and Indian comics. And they just like, "Yo, I got this person already." I mean, look at when we auditioned for Greenwich. Auditioned for Greenwich twice. And I remember the notes from the first time was, you know, I won't say who was in charge because we cool too. I don't want to offend nobody. But I remember the notes. We did great.
Say the name.
We did great. I think the first time we auditioned together, right? Didn't we audition on the same show? Or was that the second time?
I believe so. Wasn't Godfrey and Larry Bayer there?
Larry was there both times because he was the host.
Right.
I think, because did you audition twice like me or was it just one time?
I think it was
okay,
just one
time. Okay, well, the one time we did it together, we both were the best on the fucking show and we still didn't get passed.
Yeah.
Because, like, there was comics that was like, "Oh, yeah, I've only been doing it 6 months." And you and I had already had, like, 5 years in, maybe six. I don't know. We had you know, time in.
You know why? Because we didn't bring people. That's what
it was.
Yeah,
it was the bullshit.
It was bullshit. They didn't make any money off of us. We were just funny. We were just there for that audience. Yeah. They were like, "Oh, their experience. They know that this is a bringer show. They're not going to bring people."
So, okay. Yeah, I remember the notes. You know, you waited a week to get your notes from the club manager / booker. And the notes from the first time was, "I really liked the joke you did about," because at the time I was doing the Joe Clark bit. And I was doing an impression of Morgan Freeman as Joe Clark from Lean On Me. And the person and the booker was like, "Y'all really liked that joke, but I already have Dean Edwards here and Godfrey. Why do I need you at this club? You're just another impressionist," was basically what I got from that, right? So I was like, all right, cool. I waited a couple months. The auditions came up again. You hit up Buddy Flip. I go and do it again. And I did okay that time. It wasn't as good as the first. I did okay. And my notes, I think I got my notes back the same night. I didn't even have to wait for the email because the booker, you know, told me right then and there. I was like, yo, I'm not going to pass you. I thought you was funnier the first time. What? So why didn't you pass me the first time? So, you know, that's what you deal with in this shit.
I mean, looking at it, you have to see them. You have to see a comic twice, at least three times. A lot of times I made a mistake where I put people on the show, on my show at Harlem Nights, from watching them at an open mic. And they did great. Yeah. And then I put them on the show ass. I'm like, wait a minute, what just happened? Because they were in a situation where they felt like they didn't have to try hard. At an open mic, you really feel like you want to work on stuff, but you're not trying hard because of the energy that the comedians are giving to you. If they're not giving you anything, you're just like, what the fuck? Yeah. I don't care. But when you're at a regular show, the energy is different. People are giving you that attention and they want to laugh. Yeah. Comedians are just like, let me see. Let me see if they write the way I
am. Yeah, yeah.
If they have the same perspectives I have.
Excuse me.
I'm like, come on, man.
True shit, man. True shit.
So, judging, you know, you have to see a comic two or three times before you're like, all right, let me put you on the show. Because I'm speaking from a producer standpoint. For instance, somebody hit me up talking about they wanted to come on to my show because they're in town, but they haven't done stand-up since March. Nah. I'm sorry, but you have to do something somewhere else just to see where your material is at. I just can't keep having people come and be like, oh, this is my first set since March, so I don't know what to do. I'm like, I've seen it multiple times. Yeah. You're rushing. You don't know what to talk about. You think you want to talk about all the COVID stuff, and that doesn't hit. Reason why is because everybody's been talking.
It's like beating a dead horse with those bits. Those are the new OKCupid jokes and catcalling jokes.
Right. You know, COVID and mask jokes have become the new roach in the projects and in the club topics. Like in the 90s, every black Latino comedian was talking about roaches and being in the club, stuff happening in the club. So that's what COVID, social distancing, masks are the main topics. Well, white comedians, it used to be Hitler and rape. Now it's about Hitler wearing a mask and being raped by COVID. Like, that is what they're talking about at these open mics.
That's exactly what they're talking about.
I was like, y'all have no kind of fucking personality whatsoever. Why are you even doing this?
It's crazy.
Use your whiteness and get a good job. Do that. Like, come on. Look, it's my podcast. I say whatever the hell I want. If people don't like it, take your judgment. Put it in your seat. Sit down on it and fuck yourself, okay?
Yeah.
You get mad when people talk about the truth. You get even more pissed when it's directed at you and you be like, oh shit, that is true. Accept it.
Yeah. But you know, over the years, you know, too, we've seen it all. We've done a lot. I always find it funny too. Like, if it's not you or like the comics that really know me, they don't know like how I come up with my stuff. Like, people think it's so crazy. Like, because I remember like when I first started out, I would of course we was doing the same 5 minutes or whatever, because that's all you probably had back then. Right. Anyway. back then, everywhere I went, they only let me do 5 to 6 minutes anyway. It didn't take, like,
right.
2013 was when I was getting on stage and doing more time because, you know, certain shows I would do, the comics would go outside and go smoke a blunt. So, you know, Smokey. shut up. But people always would be like, yo, how do you go up there and, like, do different shit all the time? I mean, I don't know. Sometimes you write so much that you just always have new shit that you're working on. Or sometimes you just write shit on stage. And I think that's like the hardest thing to explain to people is the amount of freestyling that both you and I can do. I just think it's, we just are always performing. So I think, you know, that's how we do it. Like I know comics that when they write their jokes, they write every single detail out. I cannot write like that to save my life. I can do it on stage, but not in my notebooks or my anything. I just put the topic and bullet points. And then I go on stage and do it.
Right.
And I try it out and try it out and try it out until it's like, boom, it's perfect. And then it becomes part of my set. Like, that's how I do it.
We naturally produce humor. We don't have to look at it so... And we don't have to look at it so constructed to be like, I have to say this in order for them to get this. I have to say this in order for them to get this, to lead into this, to get the laughs here, and then I can get into this joke. We just flow. We have a natural, funny energy and ability within us that just comes out when we see a certain word or... We experience something. Like right now, the relationship stuff is so natural because in relationships, we get so upset
with our partner.
So with that frustration coming out and we give it a humorous push, it just comes out so natural and people are like, oh my God, that's so funny. I can relate to that. That just happened to me.
It's relatable shit. Yeah. And then it's always funny too when you and I are put on the same shows and that friendly competition is between us. Like, I always notice that shit over the years. So like if I go on before you, you go up with like the highest energy possible. You'd be like, yo, this nigga just killed it. So you just go up with your high energy shit up front. If I follow you, because you know I'm the voice guy, like I go out with my best impression joke, just so that way I don't fucking bomb after going on after you.
It's not so much competition. It's more like if you doing good, I know
I can do.
If I'm doing good, I know you could do good. So we don't worry about having to kind of do what the last person did.
Yeah, because Lord knows you and I have done some exceptionally horrible shows, you know, by producers at Broadway. We won't name them. Shows in Brooklyn produced by other, you know, independent producers. We won't name. And we would look like fucking titans on these shows. We was looking freaking gods. It's like, oh my God, you're so great. And I'm like,
man.
The rest of the show is terrible, but thank you.
I really had to think about what you, who
you
you're talking about. And I was like, okay. Tell me those weren't our best sets. Tell me those weren't our best sets at
they
Broadway.
They were. Because, we was doing time too, man. We were up there for like
a lot
15
of time.
Minutes,
a
20
lot.
Minutes. Work it out.
A lot of time. And usually those audiences maybe had what? 8 people, 9 people, sometime. Like one show, like 6.
And we still going up there killing, and it's like 6 comics on before us, all dying. And motherfuckers doing prize giveaways, and we still had to follow that and shit.
Yeah, and I'm just like, y'all want to do a prize giveaway right before? We gotta go on stage, man. All right, we done gave away too
true.
Much.
And we also at the hour mark.
We done gave away too much.
At an hour. We probably should do a part 2 to this.
Definitely, we should probably do,
because we could go on. I mean, 10 years is a minute, so we could go on about our experiences forever.
I mean, the road gigs. Our first road gig was in New Haven, Connecticut,
Bridgeport. We did Joker's Wild.
Yeah. Oh, Bridgeport. Okay, is that Bridgeport or New Haven?
It's College Town, so Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Thought it was New Haven.
I mean, it could have been, but I don't know. I feel like it was Bridgeport. But either way, it was Connecticut. Joker's Wild. It was me, you, Nick Alexander, Mills. We brought Kevin to get on, but they didn't put Chris Clark, who, you know, booked us. Shout out to our boy Chris Clark, aka C Snacks on YouTube. The Snacks.
C Snacks on YouTube.
He killing it with them
snacks. That shit is hilarious.
But the reason we couldn't get Kev on was because a comic from New York came up there and someone brought him to a show. We won't name that person either. And he bombed because he went up there and did all brand new shit and it was bombing. I mean, I think his regular shit would have bombed too, but
wow.
That's how I feel when you get fucked over by comedians. I'd be like, oh, word, they bombed? Good. I hope they quit. Anyway.
Nah, that's messed up.
Fuck that motherfucker. Anyway, but yeah, that was like our first road gig was together. Cause we had done shit solo.
Yeah.
Apart from working together. But yeah, Bridgeport was the first one.
And then we did what, Colgate?
Yeah, a couple years after later. That? Or like a year later. It was about 2 years later, we did Colgate University. That was dope. It was cold that night and snow was everywhere. And we couldn't use our cell phones because there was no service out there, but it was a cool gig. That was cool. The money was good. That's how I got my Xbox One. As soon as that check came, I bought a new console.
Oh, my goodness. We was on it about that money, though. But we didn't realize it took a while for that check to clear. For that invoice to clear, man.
It took like what, 2-3 weeks to clear. So, but it was worth it though. The money was good. And we did what did we do? Like 10 minutes a piece? 14 minutes a piece. We were supposed to do 15.
Yeah.
And we all did like less than that. It was like a quick show, in and out. But it was cool. That shit was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the days. Yo, it's so funny too, because Instagram just reminded me that we did that show a couple years ago. Because I had it. Yeah. I had it on my list of shows when I used to post like where I was going to be. And at the bottom it said, February whatever, Colgate University. I was like, oh shit. I think I shared it yesterday actually. As one of my throwbacks.
Wow. Damn.
Yep. So that was fun.
Very fun. It's been a great 10 years. Let's do 10 more. Let's sell out comedy clubs.
Theaters?
Let's sell out theaters.
Everything.
Then we can make our way to stadiums.
Stadium status.
And then we can kind of retire from it. And have sex.
I ain't never retiring.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
I'm gonna go on until I can't. Never retire.
It's so much fun, man. The people don't know the thrill of just having hundreds and thousands of people just laugh at the words you're saying.
It's a good feeling.
Because not only are they reconfirming how dope you are. You are just healing them at the same time.
Like the late Damon Rosier used to say, laughter is the key to life.
Yes. Rest in peace to the great Damon Rosier. Showed so much love to new comedians. Just an all around just great person.
That was my guy, man.
When I did, remember when I used to have the joke with the names and
rap name
and Northwest. And when I did that joke, he was like, that joke was funny, it was creative, and that was dope right there. He's like, yo, get show this brother some love right now. I was like, wow.
Yes sir.
Oh man. But yo, that's gonna wrap it up for the 2 month hiatus.
Both of our shows.
The Struggle Bear Cock. Both of our shows, the Struggle Bear Podcast, with my guy Justin, Just a Kid from Brooklyn Podcast. The Just a Kid from Brooklyn with a Struggle Beard episode. This is gonna be a long ass title. tell them where to find you.
You can find me on social media at Justin the Comic. I'm on everything.
Yeah, and you can find me, Rashad Bashir, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. On Instagram, comedian_rbashir2. Also, I got another movie out on Amazon Prime Video called The Next Step. Just released on Amazon Prime Video Saturday.
He's the best actor in the movie. Anyway.
Oh, my goodness. Don't. But, I'm great to, you know, be working. I put up a quote. I came up with this quote. I thought it was a dope quote. Success comes when I don't expect it. Me having the ability to work is the success. So I'm going to end it right there. Justin, always great talking to you.
Likewise.
You always have dope conversations about comedy, man. Yes, you're my comedy brother. The leaders are stand up all day. Better not bring your kids. Going to be coming back soon. We'll let you know when that is. Get Your Weight Up comedy show also coming back soon. We'll let you guys know. Follow us on social media and find out when our shows are.